And we would like as many of you, as I said earlier, to participate in this as possible. We'll have two microphones floating around the room here. Keep your questions and our comments as short as possible so as many of you as can participate as possible. And we're going to start this public conversation by getting a response. Do we have a microphone for him? Okay, by getting a response from Reginald McKnight, who's a local attorney and a representative from 100 Black Men of Charlotte.
Thank you. One of the things that I think came out of this, or that I took from this, is this concept of being devoid of hope and devoid, in my opinion, devoid of direction, something that Jim and I touched on. As a defense attorney here in Charlotte, I can tell you that the lion's share of my clients are within that age range between 18 and 34. And being devoid of direction, boys look for direction at the end of the day. And if it's gone through mass incarceration, then they're either going to make it up or they're going to find it in a negative place. So when I see a kid in the courtroom and he has on a Scarface t-shirt, I know his dad or his uncle or somebody didn't explain to him that's actually a horrible story. He lost his mom, he lost his sister, and he killed his best friend. There's nothing memorable about that movie, but they look up to it because they don't know any better. So I think that Chief Putney hit it on the head when he said that we've all got to take kind of the reins in this. And I think you hit it on the head as well, Jim and I, in terms that, you know, we've really got to reach out a lot more in terms of trying to fill that void that's been put there at the end of the day. If not, then we're going to be having this conversation again. Thank you.
All right. Who's next? Over here.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank the chief. And Mike, thank you for WFAE and putting on this event. But, you know, I'm extremely frustrated. I'm extremely angry. I'm extremely hurt. So everyone has good solutions, and I'm certainly going to step my game up to be a part of that solution. But I think what we're failing to realize is that it's not how did we get here. It has always been this way for Black people in America. It is the very essence of America that has, it's poison. I don't know how we get out. Brother Johnson's from Buffalo. You can go to Buffalo, the same issues. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Same exact issues or worse. My wife is from Ohio. Same exact issues. Heck, I went to the little tiny Burlington, North Carolina to pay a speeding ticket. Same thing there. So, you know, I don't think America has the will. I wish I was a little bit more optimistic on the federal, state, or local level as it pertains to Black people and Black men in general. I mean, when you have prisons that make money and publicly trade it to house folks, we got a problem. And it doesn't start with volunteering or tutoring, although those things are good. It's the emasculation and the downright killing of Black people, whether it's by lynching or nowadays more sophisticated measures. Thank you.
How has, across the country, we've seen lots of murders of Black men, particularly by police, and some of them are in less than clear circumstances. And we had an incident here in Charlotte that caused us a lot of problem last summer. How is CMPD handling that? What's your approach now? What are you telling officers in the field?
I think a lot of it is, just like Chief Putney had said, we have to be able to reach out into the community. We have to get out there and let people know who we are. You know, unfortunately, there are incidents out there that we, across the country, that we can't justify or explain. We have some of the same concerns. But what we realize is that when something like that happens, regardless of where it is in the country, it affects the entire profession of policing. So our role and what we have to make sure is that we are letting the community know who we are. You've seen a lot of things here recently where police officers are trying to get to know your community and let you get to know us on a personal level, because we're human, and we make some mistakes at times, but at times we also have to make sure that we educate the community on things that we do. For example, we talk transparency. I know that word's been thrown out quite a bit lately. And I know with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, a lot of things as far as what we've learned is getting information out quickly when we can, when feasible. Mm.
Let's go over. Who has the microphone? Over here. Mm-hmm.
Good evening. Good evening. This question is for Damian Johnson. If you could talk to us about the barbering industry and what your industry is able to do for those individuals who don't have a skill, minimum education, and even a background in terms of what your school is able to do to help train up individuals and put them in a gainful employment situation so that they can earn and take care of their families. We talk about problems, but I want you to share with us your experience and where the solutions can come from.
Thank you.
Great question.
The barbering industry is one of the very few industries that black people really can control from A to Z. And fortunate for me, my mother was a stylist, so we took full advantage of the barbering industry. So after learning the skill and understanding the business of barbering, you know, we opened up a barber school 13 years ago. And so when young men and women come to us who want and desire to just do better for themselves, we can provide that opportunity for them. Some of them may not even be able to afford it. Our school is a nonprofit. So when that person comes to us, they can have a track record, 30 years in jail, but because we understand those particular people, we understand their plight, we can make the decision if we want to work with them or not. And we decide that we're going to work with them. As long as they want to do better for themselves, we'll work with them. And so through that process of the schooling, you know, we find ways for them to pay for school. They get through school. We never mention anything about their background to anyone. We have 5 locations with 30 barbers. And majority of them may have a criminal background, but no one would ever know because of the way they present themselves, the way that they carry themselves. And they just want an opportunity. Right. But as a people, I've learned that, you know, you're not going to be able to, I mean, I haven't been here long, but I got a real good understanding about America. As a black man, you better do for yourself. And the one thing that we have been able to do through that industry is create opportunity for people, not only people of color, but anyone who wants to learn how to cut hair. We know that that is a route that it can take, and we can control the destiny, that career path. So it's a lot of other trades, there's a lot of other industries. It's a decision that the people that are in the decision-making role, they have to make a decision if they're going to take that chance on that person. And America has, for whatever reason, haven't been willing to take that chance on black people. And, you know, and I'm not trying to figure that out anymore. I'm deciding that I'm going to do my part and not worry about.
Let me take a question over here.
Hi, my name is Cass Otley. I'm an activist and an organizer here in Charlotte. We've had these conversations several times, and being that we know that African Americans in Charlotte and across the country are disproportionately targeted by police, and our communities are over-policed, I think it's great that they have a system in place, the police, where they're talking to the youth, but I think it would be better use of money if we could do this before these children are put into the system. We need after-school programs for these children. We need training programs for these children. We need to get ahead of this before they get into the system. It seems like we're getting them in the system and then we're giving an opportunity. What's the problem about giving an opportunity before they get into the system? Also, you know, it seems like people want to believe that African-American people don't supervise their children and teach them how to respect authority. Our children respect authority, but a lot of times they're not respected. If you look at a lot of these situations that we're seeing play over and over again across the country, a lot of our children are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing when they interact with police, and they're still being beaten, abused, and killed on video, off video. And, you know, as we're saying transparency through the police department, we need some accountability. That's where we're lacking. The transparency is fine, but we need some accountability. These bad officers need to be held accountable. They need to be convicted. And that would help people understand that all officers aren't bad. Because right now, what we're seeing play over and over again is having a horrible effect on our youth. Our children are scared to interact with the police. I'm afraid to interact with the police based on things that I've seen and things that keep playing over in our society. And I just feel like that's something that we need to work on. We need to spend some of this money and not put it on more and more police in our community, but creating some upward mobility. That's all I wanted to say.
I'd like to hear from Deputy Chief Jennings on that and also from Julie Iseult, because there are so few police officers who have been accused of these crimes are convicted. What's your take on that as a police officer?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to hit the point. We talked about the, you know, getting the kids before they get into the system. And I'm a firm believer in the strength of reaching our young people. So the diversion program that you heard Chief Putney talk about, that gets to the kids before they even get into the system. There's no arrest or anything like that. We get them. We reached over 700 kids, about 700 kids a year on this. And we try to make sure that they don't get in the system, which is what you're talking about, because as you heard Jim and I state earlier, is once they get into the system, there is that sense of hopelessness that can come about. As far as the police, the incidents with police, you know, I can tell you, I can't speak for every single incident. What I can tell you is we have, across the country, millions of encounters with police every day. And, you know, we can easily be vilified by looking at just a very few that don't go right. And I can't sit and defend everything that encounters that officers have been involved in. But what I can say is that we're not perfect. If you ever heard Chief Putney speak, he'll tell you we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. But at the same time, if we are going to get better, we have to move past the vilifying our profession so that we can get the right people, the good cops that you're talking about, the good ones that are doing the right things. We also have to celebrate when we do good, the things that we are doing right, because you hear a lot, and I didn't know we were going to go down this road with that, but you hear so much about something bad that an officer does. And it's frustrating when you see some of the good work that's out there that a lot of you probably have never even heard about. So I'll challenge that and say that we have so many great contacts with our community out there but if you listen to the media and you see if you watch the news, it almost appears like we're villains that we're just looking to hunt people down and things. That's not the case. We're looking to do good things as well.
And Julie, before we go back to the audience, she mentioned that we need after-school programs and training programs and things like that for kids. And that echoes something that I wanted to get in with Gemini about, because he has said elsewhere, I read this today, that he said that it's not so much what's being done, it's what's not being done, and that it's leading to more free time for kids to get into trouble. How do we make these programs available? Where do we find the money? Where do we find the political interest to make it happen?
So, again, I think that gets back to the systems working together, the city and the county, which we don't really do a great job of. But we're looking at, it's not just after-school program, it's in-school program, too. So we're looking at, you know, vocational training, and we've been working within our economic development committee. We put $1 million towards workforce development to work with organizations, some of them that are working with youth. Our program is mostly focused on adults, but on helping the people that have the highest barriers to employment get employment. With regards to the youth, a lot of the after-school programs is really falls under school county because those are school programs. But from an economic development standpoint, from a workforce development standpoint, we need to marry those programs better and get our young people on campus training opportunities, whether it be after school or during the work day.
How does Project Bolt work with these kids?
Project Bolt, we reach out. I work with CMPD, also with Lieutenant Evans. I go down and I more or less share my experiences, what I've been through as a child, to help prevent them from going down that same path. And I also help a few of them find jobs through different different companies and stuff like that. I work with them. They call me. Like, sometimes they don't want to talk to a police officer. Mm. Sometimes they might just want to reach out to somebody who's been through some of the same things they've been through. And it's more like a mentorship to where I can help mentor them and to help prevent them, because what our kids are doing right now, they're just screaming. And what I mean by screaming, they're screaming for help. That's how they're acting out. They're acting out through their pain and their hurt. And they need someone that they can really reach out to and talk to that can quite understand what they're going through. And this is where we come in. And this is why I try to get individuals who has been released from prison and doing some of the positive things in our community. Because once you go do your time, you did your time. You shouldn't hold a man accountable and make him do another bid when he come back out here on the streets. Right. You know, so.
Hi, my name is Michelle Vaughn. I am a second grade teacher at Druid Hills Academy, and you know where that is located. Delahaye Courts feeds my school, and we are part of Project Lift, public-private partnership, trying to help underperforming schools. But the reason I came is because I've got second grade students in my classroom who are already on the trajectory to be incarcerated. They will drop out by the ninth grade. Many of them cannot read. They are behind. They are angry. When Chief Putney was talking about the ability to pull a gun in a second, I've got children who will hit other children in a second. They are angry. They don't know how to express how they feel. They have a right to be angry. They have tough lives. They didn't ask to come here. And so every child, no matter where else they go, they have to go to school. And we have to address it in the schools. My school needs about 15 counselors, where one school may need two. We need 10 psychologists. Maybe other schools need one. So as a district, the alarm bell is sounding. It is just so loud. Our children are crying out. They need something. I have been an intermediate. I have pulled children out for fighting for looking at my brother the wrong way. But, you know, there's a saying, you know what rolls down the hill. They get it at home, it's rough, and they bring it to school. And so not only do we have to teach these children, I try to teach them how to cope, how to deal with problems, conflict resolution. I tell them, you cannot walk around hitting people. That is called assault. You go to jail for that when you're older. So now it's just the hitting, and then it just spirals from there. So what do we, I can tell you, I can tell you with certainty, if I'm alive in 10 years, I know whose names I will see on cmpd.org. And it makes me want to cry. There isn't a school year that I don't cry, because there's nothing that I can do. But as a community, as a society, as a school district, we all see it. But no one's doing anything.
Julie and also Gemini.
Gemini and Art. We're both commenting, this is a public health crisis, and if we don't start treating it like that now and get our mental health counselors involved and start putting them in the schools where they're needed most early on, we're gonna reap what we don't sow. So,
and that's exactly what I mean by post-incarceration syndrome. These kids at a young age, he or she is acting out now. So we have to attack this from a mental standpoint. This is a mental problem. Like, we treat everything else. So we need to start focusing on trying to get into where we can get more doctors and psychiatrists and stuff to try to help some of these kids from a mental aspect.
And what you talked about, those punches that you're talking about at that age, eventually that's going to turn to picking up a gun and shooting somebody.
Right.
CMPD, we have so far this year seized over 1,100 guns off the streets. And that's not just people having guns legal. That's people that are carrying them illegally or have used them in the commission of a crime. So that's the fear when you start talking about that young age resorting to violence. Eventually, it's going to be that lack, you disrespected me, so I'm going to pick up a gun.
Let's go over here.
My name is Vakala. I'm a native Charlatan, first-generation American, right? So my perspectives are a little bit different. I'm going to try to phrase this as a question because I know there's been a lot of commentary tonight. But first, I want to recognize Ms. Julie Isler for how she's trying to place it on a broader platform as to what is really going on. I don't think that we necessarily need to work with the youth, but to work with adults about how we're framing and shaping the culture and where we're going. And with that said, I want to read this little piece. A fallacy is an erroneous argument dependent upon an unsound or illogical contention. There are many fallacy examples that we can find in everyday conversations. My question to you, Mr. Mike Collins, is do you recognize how many things that you've said tonight that I take offense with in terms of how you frame the conversation in the
probably not
in the perspective?
Are you applauding him or applauding me? Probably not.
Would you like some examples?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. So some examples would be. So some examples would be like when you opened up in your monologue, it was like you said something about whom these statistics would be just another statistic. I would like you to have exposed to who these people, to whom the statistics that we're talking about and the increase in the murder rate, that would be a statistic. Terms like senseless violence acts, like as if there are some violent acts that are sensible. You know what I mean? Like terms like crime and shame. Like are we clear on where shame stems from in terms of doing a crime and where people are empowered for being the criminals that they are? I mean, like I'm just trying to pay attention to the wording and how the conversation is being had. I want to influence the conversation and direct it for change. And I appreciate Ms. Eisler for talking about, you know, just the narrative and breakdown. But I'd love the opportunity to speak about the responsibility of a journalist in terms of phrasing the questions and providing that platform.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, my name is Sadiq Singleton. Chief Putney made a statement earlier about the government not coming to our aid. Well, I want to let everybody of color know in here, there is nobody in the past or anybody that's in the present that's going to come to our aid. Now, they say it's 44 million black people in this country. I think sometimes we have these conversations, we look at the macro, but we never look at the micro, right? So let's say 22 million of those are black men. Mass incarceration, 2 million that are locked up. But out of those 20 million, if our sons and daughters are okay, if we go out in the community, we don't have communities of black people, first of all. The community is self-sustaining. Everything you need in the community is there. We have neighborhoods. So wherever our neighborhoods are at, we have to reach the young men in that neighborhood that might be fatherless. Because anywhere you find a male, you're going to find a father. So we got to stop looking for this mysterious person or people or system to come down and save us. It's just not going to happen. 2 years from now, it'll be 400 years before the first 20 people of African descent came to this country. It ain't going to happen. So we have to take onus on ourselves as black people. And once I live by this motto. I know where I come from. I know ancient Kemet. I know I'm the first man on earth. I know that. So now I can treat him of European descent with respect, because I know who I am. But a lot of us don't know who we are. So Malcolm said something, the hate that hate produced. That's what we're seeing in the streets, and we got to keep working to reverse that.
Okay. Where's the microphone? Right there?
Hello?
Yep, you're on.
Pardon me. My name is Michael Thomas. I thank everyone for coming here, and I can't clap my hand right now, but thanks for everyone coming. We have a problem here, and I have the solution to the problem, but I won't share it with you. I'll share another solution to another problem that we have that is a critical necessity. It's not an embellishment of life. It's a necessity. I have written a housing program that enables every legal and desiring person in the country in 3,144 counties coast to coast to get a house in addition to a good running car, truck, van, or SUV, no mortgage, no interest, no credit, no down payment, no rent, no job, no loan, no grant, no government aid, no sponsor, no collaborator, no debt, no finance, no one turned down. Because it's not about credit, it's about life. And if you are living, you need a home. And if you're living, you need transportation. And we need to come out of the old paradigm and come into the new paradigm. We're still not, you know, trying to ride a horse to California. We can get on a plane. So this Howie Moore program that I have is a plane. It's a better, faster, easier way of getting a home with no mortgage or no interest or no debt. Homeless person, jobless person, part-time worker, full-time worker, existing homeowners,
and how
business
can
owner. It doesn't matter.
I'm going to stop you, but how can they find out about it?
1000greatminds.com. We are recruiting a staff of 1,000 people to help us to start up, launch, direct, and manage this nationwide project to get it done. And people are relying on us to pay rent and pay mortgages, and we are conditioned to believe that.
I asked people at the beginning to keep this short, 1000greatminds.com. Let's go over here.
Okay. First of all, thank you for the program. I want to say one of the things that you mentioned was what is the system that got us here? And one of the things we'll continue to see happen in Charlotte is with the now what we call gentrification program, but it's actually colonization. And what's happening, if you looking at the city historically, within a two-mile radius of uptown Charlotte, it has been colonized. So we're pushing our people away. And when businesses come in, Ms. Isaac, you said we want people to work together, but what happens is folks who don't look like us come in and tell us that our way of living is not correct, and we have to change. There's a store opening on Roswell's Ferry, and what happened was when they came in and they didn't look like us and they saw some brothers out on the corner, instead of engaging with them and trying to maybe offer them opportunities, what did they do? They called the police. So when they call the police, now the police engage and there's conflict that is unnecessary. So if we really want to work together, let's look at this city historically. Let's stop calling it gentrification because we're very conscious people, but it's colonization. You're taking over, telling us what we do is not acceptable, it's not right. And if we're going to work together, you have to respect our culture as we are mandatory to respect yours.
Where's the mic over here, right here?
Good afternoon. Thank you to everyone who spoke on the panel. I want to expound a little bit on what the brother said earlier. For me, it's important that we are honest and authentic in order to have real change, which would include some transparency as well, of course. But until we address systemic racism and systemic oppression, particularly against black people, this conversation will continue. Until black people truly know who they are, have a cultural understanding and a self-love, we will always have division and murders in our community. Now, I want to deal with black people because I happen to be a black woman, a very proud black woman, and love my blackness. In Charlotte in particular, every day there's a new nonprofit of black people. And those black people are used as political pawns and honestly prostitutes against black people. Because what happens is they are paid to do a small program in the community. They are lifted up in the media as if they're doing something and nothing concrete is being done. Until we come together, truly come together, lay our own needs, our own desires, our own beliefs that we're grand and wonderful, humble ourselves and say it's not about me, but it's about the people we want to serve, we will never ever get where we want to go. Now, I'm a person who's hopeful. I am hopeful that we will get our act together. But every day I get a call, or every night, as CMPD knows, I get a call that someone died. I stay up all night crying and asking God, what can I do? I'm only one person. Every person in this room who got up and said, I'm an activist, activist where? Where are you acting? Because at the end of the day, if we're not working together, instead of in these silos and having issues with one another that causes us division, we are the problem. Our children see us divided. Our children see the lack of love. And love is an action word.
Thank you. Let's go over here very quickly because we're running short on time. Go ahead. Keep it short, please.
Until we get someone actually in office, in a position that understands, we will keep on seeing what we see. Just like we have politicians that's here, we need someone from the ground who really understands and really gets it. My son was murdered last year. And people sit here and they say, you don't get involved until it happened to you. That's not true. I've been on the ground since I've been in Charlotte, since 05. I ran for mayor in 2013. That was before my son was murdered. I walked the streets with the young people. I know what this system, how this system is broken. I lived in public housing as an adult, not as a baby that my mom had me there, but as an adult. I served on the Charlotte Housing Authority Board. I received food stamps, but I also have an associate's degree. I also have a bachelor's degree. I also have a master's degree. So I know how this system is broken. So unless you have someone that's sitting on the panel or sitting in the police department, on the city council, on the county council, state level, local level, that gets it, we're going to continue to have this problem. That's why, again, I'm running for mayor. I don't have the money to get my message out, but I have a message to be told and to be heard. And the young people listens to me because they know I gets it. They know I understand.
Okay, we can't make political speeches here tonight. Thank you, though. One more, and then we're out of time, I believe. Go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for doing this. I'm Dr. Madeline, president and founder of ExodusFoundation.org. We want a 24-hour reentry mentoring program for people coming home from prison. Our mentors' care has stood in the way, I would say, of several murders and armed robberies. That kind of care is missing, and we need to do more of that. But the trigger is pulled in the rich neighborhoods, and the shot is heard in the poor neighborhoods. So what needs to happen next, I would ask, is to take this conversation to a neighborhood where we will attract a predominantly white audience and ask, are you an accomplice to murder? Because when Pharaoh, since we're in a church, when the Pharaoh issued the decree to kill all of the males, he is responsible whether he did the killing or not for what happened afterwards. And so when you deny people health care and you deny food stamps and you deny mental health care, that is intentional. You know what the outcome is going to be for the people with the least resources. So the reason my brother said something about the fallaciousness of some of the assumptions we make here is because we're not addressing where the poison is coming from. Okay, so let's do that. Let's have a part two. This was fantastic, but let's have a part two and raise the question about broaden the definition of murder, because murder starts with the people who plot it.
Let me just ask before we wrap this up, because this is not a problem that is particular to Charlotte, obviously. Are there things being done in other cities that have the same problem that seem to be having a positive effect, either through law enforcement or through social services or through education or through government policy? Anybody can take it. Deputy Chief, I'll start with police enforcement.
All right, we'll start. I know one thing that the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department has been doing. We've been talking to several agencies across the country. A lot of them are experiencing the exact same things that we are, in not just a spike in violent crimes, but also retention of police officers, trying to hire police officers, and the struggles to try and communicate with the public. But some of the things that have been successful have not been programs and things that have started by the police, but have been supported by the police. But the community is what's going to make the success. So when things are done, such as Jim and I spoke of, that he's doing, those are the things that we see across the country that are more successful, because when the police try to do it, it might start out well, but then it eventually fades away.
And Julie, as the representative, the one representative of all politicians in America on the panel here, respond to her, because I think she brought up an interesting point. We are witnessing people, attempts to hurt the very people who would stand to be hurt the most with this change in healthcare policy, for instance, at the federal level. And it happens at other levels with other policies. How do we change the way, or be more careful about the way politicians think about what they're doing and how it impacts real human beings?
Wow. I can't speak for all politicians, nor would I even want to. But I think I'll make a point that when we say we need to elect that one person, anybody who tells you they're going to run for office because they're going to fix anything you need to call them to question on that, because I know for myself, I serve with 10 other voting members, so I can't come on to council and say, this is what I'm going to get done. The most I can do, and I see my colleague, Mr. Phipps here, we can convince 5 other people to vote the way we want to vote. That's the most powerful thing we can do. So community, I can't state it enough how impactful the public can be. When we hear from you, when you show up at committee meetings, at council meetings, we see you there. And, yeah, people see that you're there, and that's how you're going to vote, is how the people want you to vote. So when you show up, it's very impactful. That's how I figured out I could run, because I watched the politicians pay attention to us when we'd gather people together and show up at their meetings. So community has such a big role. And to address that point, I looked at what other cities are doing across the country, and I haven't really found anything that's more has been more powerful than what we're trying to do locally, and that's involving the community. Reverend Mack is here from the NAACP. What they're doing, what our churches are doing, what Genesis is doing, community is what's going to make the difference. And then we are the people that will enact the policies that will make that happen. But government's not going to do it. It's the people.
We What do you mean by the lack of values?
Well, I don't know that it's a values question. I think it's an education. So, and I'll be the first to say that I was pretty ignorant to it until I was a crime victim, and it got me out of my bubble awfully quick. So it's education. Henry Gunn, who's an East Side activist, said to me, Julie, crime works in your neighborhood, but it lives in my neighborhood. And that was a really powerful comment for me that helped me to understand, to connect the dots. Hmm. And so what I try to do is get the community to understand it's going to affect you. I mean, what happened to me was random. Crime happens. It looks for opportunity, right? In some neighborhoods, there's more opportunity than others. But if people don't understand how we're all interconnected and how it's all going to come together, it's not a value. Well, for some people, it might be a values issue, but it's an education. Yeah.
I want to thank everybody who has participated, and I know a lot more people wanted to get a comment or a question made and could not, but I want to thank you for being here and thank you for joining us for this. But we also want to keep this going, and there's a telephone number that none of you will remember, but I'm going to give it out just on the off chance that you might, because you can call that number and leave your comment or question, and we will follow up on these comments and questions at 704-879-3536. Now, you can get that number at our website at wfae.org. 879-3536. 879-3536. And wfae.org will have it on our website. I want to thank Chief Kerr Putney and Deputy Chief Johnny Jennings, Gemini Boyd, Julie Isel, Julie Williams, and Damian Johnson for being with us on the panel tonight. Thank you all.